Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, Michigan, and Florida, and now this. 22 states across the country in the superest Tuesday, if that's a word, that the United States of America has ever seen. There will be more states voting tomorrow on primaries and caucuses for the President of the United States on the single day than has ever happened in American history before. And to make it even more exciting, we don't know what's going to happen. Don't listen to any of the pundits. They can't tell you. It's a very fluid race, both on the Republican and the Democratic side. In fact, about a few months ago, Republican strategist Mike Lane and I, we had basically said that Hillary Clinton had it wrapped up and the Republican side was very fluid. Today, the Democrats are even more fluid than the Republicans. Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, it's neck and neck, and it could go all the way to the convention. On the Republican side, it seems to be John McCain, but he's only winning 35-40% of the Republican vote. The conservatives are split between Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee, and in the winner-take-all Republican Party, John McCain may just go to convention as the nominee without ever winning a majority of the conservative vote. It's a very interesting fluid situation, and I want to invite you to join in and tell us who you want and why, or why you're undecided. The number is on your screen. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. Mike Lane, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, it's great to be back. Thank you so much.
In this Super Tuesday, here's how I see it. The Democrats are completely undecided. Most of us are very undecided. Even those of us that support Clinton or support Obama could switch at any moment. We like both candidates a lot. They're actually very similar in many different ways. And we can't decide between these two very good candidates. On the Republican side, you're having trouble too. You can't decide between either of the candidates because the Republican Party hates McCain, doesn't trust Romney, and dislikes Huckabee. You also are having a difficult decision, but for the exact opposite reasons we do.
Nice spin, Mark. It doesn't quite work that way. In fact, it looks like, whereas 2 weeks ago, like you said, that the Republicans were the one who were going to drag this out to the convention, while the Democrats were going to wrap it up and give Senator Clinton a real head start in terms of getting her campaign going. Now it's flip-flopped 180 degrees on both sides, not only because you have two candidates that are equally strong, but because your rules are slightly different or majorly different than the Republicans. You're likely to have your candidate slog it out to the convention, whereas if things continue tomorrow the way they look tonight, Senator McCain is either going to take a giant step towards wrapping it up tomorrow, making it virtually mathematically impossible for Governor Romney to come back, or he's going to wrap it up completely. I think it'll be the first. I think he'll be close, but no cigar.
I want to talk about the rules. It is a big difference between proportional representation and winner-take-all. I'll get to that in a second, but first I want you to address my overall point. It's not just me saying this, Mike. Polls overwhelmingly show that the Democrats are very happy with both of their front-runners. Some prefer Obama, some prefer Clinton, but just about everyone will vote for the other one if they don't
right.
get it. They're very similar on the issues. You might like Obama's charisma. You might like Clinton's knowledge of policy. But in essence, it's a choice between two goods. You can't deny that polls show Democrats like their choices. And in fact, in the primaries we've had to date, the Democrats who voted have broken all kinds of records. We see massive numbers of people voting. In your party, Mike, it's the opposite. Polls show your party doesn't like your candidates, and frankly, your numbers are down. If you look, whether it's South Carolina, Iowa, or New Hampshire, you have fewer people voting in your primaries than ever before.
Let me explain to you the way this is really coming together. You have on your side, although you had at one point 8, 9, 10 candidates in the race, you really only had two candidates in the race, maybe 2.5 if you want to say John Edwards was sort of a candidate, but the rest of them were never really serious. Republicans had 5, 6, 7 candidates in the race, and so therefore our support was spread among more people. We've done the winnowing process. The people who are right now saying, well, gee, I don't know about Governor Romney or I don't know about John McCain, are people who were initially with other folks. I myself was a Thompson guy to start with. Now, I don't know where I got that because he certainly didn't do a lot, but now that my guy is out, I'm looking around to see who my guy is going to be, and my choices by the process have been limited to now Governor Mitt Romney and Senator John McCain. So I've got to having initially reviewed them and not selected them, I've got to go through the second process and say, okay, this is the guy I want.
Okay, but that's an explanation, but it's also a concession. And the concession is, I think you have to concede, the Democrats are happier about our choices than you Republicans are about your choices.
Republicans are going to be very happy about their choices come November.
You know, and the other party regulars will try to sell whoever it is.
Right now,
you have to concede the point. We're happier about our candidates than you are.
All right. There is no doubt that the people who are strong Romney supporters are not only just Romney supporters, but some of them are anti-McCain people. And some people who are McCain folks are, you know, looking at this Romney guy and saying, well, he's too new, you know, well, what do we know about him? He hasn't really defined himself, you know, et cetera. Maybe he's got to change on an issue, particularly the abortion issue, et cetera. But we have a tendency to unify as a party. And once we have a nominee, we will unify as a party.
I'll take that as a concession. You're not unified right now.
Well, nobody's unified right now. You're not unified.
We're not.
You've got two people who are just banging each other.
Let me show you the difference. I think any of us can imagine a Clinton-Obama ticket, even an Obama-Clinton ticket.
I think that
a Clinton-Obama ticket is more likely than an Obama-Clinton ticket because their policies are largely identical. It takes a microscope to find the differences between the two of them.
Then where's the balance on your ticket? You need balance.
But your candidates, they are fighting so much. There's no way that they could be on the same ticket. You agree with me on that? It's
doubtful that
McCain would not pick Romney. Romney would not pick McCain. Neither would pick Huckabee.
There are two high-profile Democrats who cannot imagine Clinton, Obama, or Obama, Clinton. And those two high-profile Democrats are Obama and Clinton. Neither one of them is going to stomach the other one on the ticket.
Yeah, you don't know. You're speculating. It's pure speculation.
Look at the way they've conducted the campaign against each other.
They're trying to win.
Of course exactly.
They're trying. There's nothing wrong with that.
And they're getting nasty, and they're getting mean to each other, and these things have a tendency to linger.
Actually, I think what you'll find, particularly if you look at the last Democratic debate, is that to the extent that surrogates on either side have gotten nasty and mean, and I include in that surrogate Bill Clinton, both campaigns have told them to tone it down. Hillary Clinton has said, Bill, you say nice things about me, and you don't talk about Obama anymore. Obama has said to his surrogates, you know, don't criticize Clinton, don't make it personal, we're going to talk about what we want for America. Of course they're trying to distinguish between them, but I think that if you look at just the Democratic debate, you see two people that have a lot of respect for each other and a lot of respect for their policies, whereas your party, McCain's calling Romney a liar, Romney's calling McCain a liar, they're both attacking Huckabee, and I think the reason is because while there are stylistic differences between Clinton and Obama, certainly, and we'll talk about those, in your party there are major policy differences. You have the social conservatives with Huckabee, you have the economic conservatives with Romney, and you have the moderate wing of your party with McCain, and those three wings hate each other.
You know what? Huckabee's not a player anymore. I think we can dismiss him. No, he's not a player.
He's not a player to win.
He's not.
But without Huckabee, Romney would be winning all these races, wouldn't he?
Romney would be doing better than he's doing today if Huckabee was out of the race.
He'd be ahead.
And I mean, if you see some of Romney's people, they will go public and they will be disdainful of Governor Huckabee as to why is he in the race.
Well, Huckabee may very well win a southern state or two.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Huckabee will win Arkansas. Exactly.
Right.
Beyond that, I don't see
Alabama or Georgia, no?
Not likely. He could. I mean, he's in a close third place in a few of the southern states, but he's in a close third place. I mean, he's just not.
But here's the heart of the problem in your party. You have, and this, of course, is what we were talking about before, the difference in the rules. The Democrats have a proportional representation.
Right.
We believe in our party that if one candidate gets 60% and the other gets 40%, the candidate with 60 gets 60% of the delegates, the one with 40 gets 40% of the delegates. We're a very democratic party. We're called the Democratic Party. Your party believes winner take all. The minorities should have absolutely no right to say anything. If one candidate gets 50.1% of California and the other gets 49.9%, all of those in the 49.9% are completely disenfranchised. That's the rule of your party.
It's actually even better than that. If you get a plurality, it doesn't have to be
50.1%. Right. You're right.
If you get a plurality.
Even better.
You know what?
If McCain gets 36 and Romney gets 33 and Huckabee gets 27, all the delegates go to McCain.
We admire winners. We set the rules up for people to go into a state and campaign to win. Now, you know, nice try on yours, but let's take California as an example. 60-40 doesn't quite do it, you know, or that actually does do it. But if you have a congressional district that has four delegates to the convention out of it and one candidate has 59% and the other candidate has 41%, those delegates are still split 50-50.
I'll grant you this.
You have to be over 60% to even get a third delegate.
I'll grant you this, Mike. I don't think we should ever have even delegates in any of our districts. If I have a change that I would propose to the Democratic Party, all the districts should have an odd number, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, because I do think that the winners should get something.
This goes back to what you guys, are doing in schools all the time, which is that nobody can ever lose, nobody can ever fail.
It's called democracy, Mike. We understand even if you lose a race by a close margin, the minorities are still part of the party. They're still Americans. They should still have a voice.
All they have to do is win a state, and they get to go to the convention.
But it's ridiculous to have an idea. You can imagine a situation where you have four states where someone wins 51-49, mm-hmm. and then four states where the candidate with 49 wins 90-10. Now, the candidate with the 90-10 and the 49 has much more national support than the other candidate. That's the one that should be going to the convention. But your party, the one that supports the Electoral College, the one that doesn't like the popular vote winner, the one that doesn't believe democracy should play in America, you go with the winner-take-all system.
You know what? We reward winning. We think that winning's an important thing. We think that you ought to go out there and put it on the line and see if you can bring home a gold medal. And you know what?
Well, here are the consequences.
Tell me who won a silver medal in the downhill 4 years ago in the Winter Olympics.
Here are the consequences.
Who the silver medal winners are?
The consequences are, as you well know, that because we Democrats are looking for more democracy, we are more likely to have a convention fight.
You will have a convention fight.
And you folks are. You are more likely. But what you might end up doing is having the 36% candidate. Because yours is a three-candidate race and ours is a two-candidate race. And I'm going to say four, because Ron Paul will get his 8 to 10% in many, many states.
But he's
not going to win the nomination. But he is a factor in the sense that he has a certain portion of your party, 10% or so, maybe even 15 or 20% in some of the western states, that plays a role. Because ours is a two-person race. And yours is a three, maybe even four, but
I'll grant you
three and a third person race.
No, it's basically two and then two additional.
Two and
thirds.
Three quarters.
Two and two additional.
Whatever
thirds,
it is, you can't deny that particularly Huckabee plays a major role. McCain does not have the support of most conservatives in your party, does he?
I disagree that Huckabee is going to continue to play a major role. He will play a minor role. He'll get a speaking slot at the convention.
Will he leave after Super Tuesday?
He'll leave after Super Tuesday.
He'll leave after Super Tuesday.
You can't go into 24 primaries, win one, and continue to pretend that you're viable.
Out of 22.
Candidates and particularly their consultants want to believe that they're viable even when they're not. It has to do with keeping the payroll going and things like that. What's going to happen is Governor Huckabee's financial support is going to dry up and he's not going to have the resources to carry on a campaign.
Let me ask you this. I don't think Huckabee's going to win either. But don't you agree with me that by splitting the social conservatives from the economic conservatives, the conservative vote is split, and so the 35% of your party that's not conservative, they're taking over, and that's going to make the majority of your party pretty upset when they find out, McCain's our nominee.
You know, it's very interesting why the so-called conservative spokespeople are unhappy with John McCain.
And Coulter and Rush Limbaugh are very unhappy with John McCain.
And Coulter and Rush Limbaugh. Let's review John McCain's record, okay? John McCain has been pro-Second Amendment and pro-life his entire career, and he has an 82% positive rating for the American Conservative Union. How much more conservative do they want?
Well, we know what they want. They want someone like George Bush, someone who's willing to shred the Constitution of the United States. We're going to talk about what this election means for George Bush. What does it mean that the entire country seems to be moving to the left? Is this a reflection on Bush's policies? We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop and your calls after this.
How far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway? Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? And how long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone, and in the process, maybe learn something yourself? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Monica and her friends want you to know that you should never get near a dog when it is eating, playing with a favorite toy, or sleeping. It's really important to make time for exercise and games and keep your dog's vaccines up to date. Never leave a dog in a small, confined space. This can make dogs aggressive like Monica. If you follow this advice, you and your dog can play safely and happily together.
We're back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm discussing Super Tuesday with my guest, Republican strategist Mike Lane. We want to take your calls and listen to what you have to say. Many of you have already written in on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. There's still time to do that. Put your comment on the blog. Go to RadioInsideScoop.com. We'll be reading your comments at the end of the hour. There's also a chance for you to call in and address us personally. Bring it on. Tell us who your candidate is and why you support him or her. Feel free to tell Mike or myself that we're dead wrong. This is your show as much as ours. The number is on your screen, the toll-free number, if you're listening on the web, 888-488-MARK. Mike, it's interesting. Bush gets virtually no news these days. He is the President of the United States for another year. Recently, he just did a number of signing statements where he said that Congress's bill to approve various military expenditures where they said don't use it for permanent bases in Iraq, he did a nice little signing statement and said, I'm going to ignore that. Here you have, you know, the power of the purse is right here in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. George Bush is ripping up the Constitution and nobody's noticing. And I think the reason is not only have Democrats moved on, not only have Americans moved on, but your party has moved on. George Bush's approval ratings are somewhere between Nixon's and Carter's, lower than Carter's, barely higher than the president that was forced from office. And in the Democratic Party, you see a lot of discussion about change. But in the Republican Party, Mitt Romney uses the word change. McCain will tell you that Bush's policy in Iraq was a terrible policy, the Rumsfeld policy, he calls it, because he doesn't want to call it the Bush policy. Isn't all of America moving away from the Bush era?
Mark, you know, elections are about the future, not about the past. Each individual on both sides that are running to articulate a vision if they're going to win. John McCain and Mitt Romney are trying to articulate what their vision is going to be, and their vision doesn't include what the past is about. It includes the future. Let me tell you this. It's okay when you're getting the nomination for both Senator Clinton and Barack Obama to talk about, you know, how bad the president is and how, you know, they're going to change all his policies and stuff like that. But once one of them gets the nomination, if they continue to campaign against the president instead of against their opponent, we're going to have a Republican president, because this election is not about George Bush. It's about the future.
Mike, in 1988, George Herbert Walker Bush definitely did not run away from Ronald Reagan. He kept him Alzheimer's riddled as he was, as much by his side as he could. He said, four more years, you will not find John McCain or Mitt Romney or Mike Huckabee ever say, or Ron Paul, ever say the word four more years. Why not?
Well, I mean, you pointed out correctly that the president's poll numbers are not good. Now, fortunately for the president, his poll numbers are twice what the Democratic Congress's poll numbers are. And
no, Speaker they're, Pelosi. Not. They're not.
George Bush's approval rating, I think last time I saw, was 31%. The Democratic Congress is down in the teens.
No, Congress, you know, is in the teens. The Democrats in Congress are ranked always above the Republicans and over the 30s.
It's a Democratic.
But here's my
I didn't
point.
Say the Democrat. I said the Democratic Congress is in the teens.
Right, but the Democrats in Congress is much higher.
In fact, Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives was down around 11% about a month and a half ago.
The House, but, you know, but the Democrats are
who's
always
the speaker?
Ranked 10
is it Nancy Pelosi?
Above the Republicans.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Playing with figures. Look, in your party, there was a front page article in the Washington Post today, Republicans trying to get used to the idea of John McCain. You yourself talked to me about getting in touch with your inner McCain.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, You know, John McCain is anything but a team player. John McCain has made a career. In fact, his signature has been being a maverick.
He joined on campaign finance reform with the Democrats.
He joined on a lot of things.
No torture. I mean, all your party wants to torture except John McCain. All your party loves Guantanamo Bay and wants more secret prisons except John McCain.
First of all, Guantanamo Bay was not a secret prison. And secondly, there's no torture going on there. But, you know.
Oh, well, it depends on what the definition of torture is, right? Because Mukasey can't seem to say and Bush can't seem to say.
The only thing that has been alleged might be torture that Senator McCain worked on was waterboarding. And any waterboarding that may or may not have taken place did not take place at Guantanamo. It may have taken place in other areas.
So, talk about distinctions without a difference. We have secret prisons, we have torture, and we have Guantanamo.
It doesn't matter.
The point is that John McCain differs from the rest of your party, and that the rest of your party, the majority of your party, loves torture.
John McCain has been a maverick, a guy who has delighted over an extended career of taking a position in direct contrary position to what the mainstream thought of the Republican Party has been. This is what makes the press love him. This is what makes him very attractive to independents. He's cultivated this maverick independent image, et cetera. And as a result, mainstream Republicans have a large amount of dis-ease with a guy who's done that. Now,
Ann Coulter, who I never like to mention on this show, and who we both understand is a performance artist rather than a real human being, has said that she would vote for Hillary Clinton over John McCain. We can discount her. She's a performance artist. But James Dobson has said he won't vote for John McCain. You can't discount him and the religious right. Rush Limbaugh is very much against John McCain. And it's not just the radio hosts and so forth. A lot of people in your party think that John McCain isn't conservative enough. You know about the Romney ad, where they show which candidate supported this, that, and the other, and they show Hillary Clinton, and behind her is John McCain. You've seen that
ad. I've seen the ad.
It's a good ad, isn't it?
It's a pretty good ad, yeah. But let's again look at John McCain's record. He has, on the social issues, he has a career of supporting a socially conservative agenda.
He's pro-life, does not believe a woman has a right to abortion.
He believes in protecting unborn children is what he does. And he also
believes
in the Second Amendment.
Reproductive choices.
He has an 82% approval rating from the American Conservative Union, which is the Bible organization for rating conservatives. Look, Rush Limbaugh has been rebuked by a few of the party elders. Now, you know, he's also selling soap, which is a euphemism for he's in business to make money.
I love to hear you criticize Rush Limbaugh.
Ann Coulter is in business to make money. This is what they're doing. They're making money. At the end of the day, they'll be back on the John McCain team. It's not going to be that difficult.
You would have to agree that McCain is the minority choice of your party. If Huckabee jumped out, and if Super Tuesday were not so super, and there are maybe five states, and Huckabee dropped out, I think you would agree. In fact, once Huckabee drops out, Romney gets the majority of your party. More people in your party like Romney than like McCain.
The rule,
you agree?
The rules are known by everybody as the game starts.
No, but the rules don't change in the middle of the game. Address my issue.
Everybody started that way.
Fine. But address my point. Your party, if down to a two-man race, the majority of your party supports Romney and not McCain. You agree or disagree?
You know, we don't know because it's not a two-man race. There are some polls that indicate that if Huckabee was not in the race, that his supporters would, in larger percentages, go to Romney. Would they be enough to help Governor Romney out tomorrow? I don't know. First of all, I haven't run the numbers. And second of all, those kind of second-choice polls are notoriously unreliable. You really don't know where you're going on that. It's the first-choice polls that tell you more than the second-choice polls. I can tell you that the party has not coalesced yet completely around either Senator McCain or Governor Romney, but once we have a nominee, it will. The party will come together. We have a history of doing that. We don't wear our divisions on our sleeves the way you guys do.
I'll tell you, you know, I mean, just like the Republicans gave a lot of money to Ralph Nader, I'm almost tempted to give a lot of money to James Dobson if he'll run for a third-party candidacy, because that would really disrupt your party.
Well, you know, I think Dobson's influence is overrated. He certainly has some. We certainly would rather have him as part of the coalition rather than outside the coalition. There's no doubt that he has the ability to cause an amount of mischief. I don't know how much. But he's... You know, we're not going to worry about James Dobson. We have a nominee that we'll see either tomorrow or in the next 2-3 weeks, and that's who the party's going to get behind. James Dobson will have an invitation to join the party if he chooses to go another direction. We'll find a way to get the coalition up to 51%.
Let me ask you this. If John McCain wins, will this be a general election about Iraq, whereas if Romney wins, it'll be a general election about the economy? I mean, because, you know, Romney wants to talk about the economy and McCain wants to talk about Iraq, and sometimes they're talking past each other.
I think that, you know, Senator McCain's historical strong suit is national security and national defense. I think that, you know, Governor Romney is looking for an issue that will resonate to stop the McCain Express that's going through. He had hoped that the economy was going to be that issue. It turns out, if you can believe the polls that we're looking at over here,
well, the American people are more concerned with the economy these days. According
to
the polls.
Because we're doing so well in Iraq that they're not as concerned about Iraq as they used to be.
No, because they know George Bush won't change his mind on Iraq.
The campaign will be about your nominee trying to emphasize those issues that they think they have common with more than half the voters, and it'll be about our nominee trying to emphasize those issues that they think they have in common with more than half the voters. National security is going to continue to play a huge role in this. Don't think that you can just get away from it, because it's going to be there.
I think it's fine. I relish a November battle about Iraq and whether the $1 trillion spent and the 4,000 American lives and tens of thousands of wounded is worthwhile, or maybe we should spend that money on health care and bridges in America. I hope we have that debate. But here's my question. If John McCain is the nominee, will that dispirit a lot of your party? You might get more independents, will many of them stay home and say, you know what, I loved George Bush, I loved Karl Rove, I hate the Constitution, but John McCain, I'm going to stay in bed today.
We talked a little bit about this before the show started and said that we'd get to it on the air. So let me bring up now, there are some irresponsible people on both sides that will look at the nominee and say, you know what, I'd rather stay home, I'd rather do nothing, you know, and those are irresponsible kooks. They really are. They're wholly irresponsible kooks. You have a civic obligation to vote. Now, you have a civil right not to vote, but you have a civic and a moral obligation to vote. And the people who stay home, you know what, I can't worry about them.
They can vote for a third party. They can vote for Pat Robertson or James Dobson.
Neither one of them are going to run.
Or Mike Huckabee.
He's not going to run either. So the question is, when you're fighting over, you know, 45% to your nominee and 45% to my nominee, and the election is going to be determined by the 10% in the middle who are swing voters, Senator McCain has a very strong reputation and a proven track record of attracting that kind of voter. That's going to be his strength in November if he gets the nomination, which I think he will. And that is going to be a significant issue that your nominee is going to have to figure out how to deal with.
But you told me coming in that California, they're practically tied. California is a winner-take-all state. It's so many delegates. If Romney wins California, we could be undecided after June.
California is right now within the margin of error. The very last poll gave a slight 1%, 2% lead to Governor Romney. We'll see how it comes out tomorrow.
Coming up after the break, the Democrats. Is it Obama or Clinton? And I'm going to let you know who I endorse. Call in and give us your views.
Serves a sentence with you.
I'm Bob Costas, and I've been broadcasting sports for a long time. Much of what I do is ad-libbed, but still, one of the most important aspects of my job is being able to write. Narrations, essays, commentaries. It's essential to express those thoughts and concepts clearly and concisely. Good writing is essential for almost any career. And with today's advanced technology, the National Commission on Writing reports that the need to write well has never been more important. Writing is everybody's business.
Sure, my neighbors Gene and Louise, they may be superheroes with superpowers, but that doesn't make them so super at saving energy and money.
Honey!
I may not be able to harness the power of the elements, but I save significant cash and help the environment with appliances, electronics, and windows featuring the Energy Star label. So discover your own energy-saving superpowers. Go to ASE.org/consumers.
Mom!
making fondue again.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am Mark Levine. I'm here with Republican strategist Mike Lane. We talked about the Republicans. Now on to the Democrats. The race between Obama and Clinton is as close as anyone can remember at any time in memorable history. I think you have to go back to James K. Polk in the 1800s to find a Democratic race as close as this one. The pundits don't dare say who's going to win. Hillary Clinton was kind of ahead going into this, but Obama's momentum is going up. He's got the young people. She's got the older people. She's got more women. He has more African Americans. She has more Latinos. And really, the question is, why should we divide people up this way anyway? The main thing that I find interesting, Mike, in this race is how similar the two are in a matter of issues. I did an endorsement show last week, and I went through the various issues, and I looked for the differences among them, and I found some. For example, I support Hillary's health care plan over Barack Obama's because I think it is good to require everyone to be part of the program. I don't want to have free riders who take advantage of it, get sick, and then come into the system. I like hers better. I like his position on Iraq better. I think he could give a very clean race against a John McCain and say, well, I was against it from the outset. Is this $1 trillion well spent? I think he's better on that. I think he's better on bankruptcy, and she's better on energy. But the differences are so tiny that if I have a hard time finding them, I guarantee you most Democratic voters, some are looking at them, but many are looking at things other than that, the issue of change versus experience. Have your views changed? Has Barack Obama surprised you in becoming the formidable candidate that he's become?
Well, over a long time, yes. You remember we did a show together about 2 months ago, and I said I thought Barack Obama was going to be the nominee. That was right after Iowa.
That was right after Iowa. And everyone right said that,
Iowa.
And then she won New Hampshire,
right.
And then it was...
Well, she was resilient in New Hampshire. One thing you can, you know, talk about the polls is that they haven't been able to measure exactly who's going to come out, and so that's why they've been fluctuating and so inaccurate. Right now, if you look at what's supposed to happen tomorrow on Super Tuesday, Senator Clinton is
she'll win her state of New York. He'll win Illinois.
She'll win New York and
New Jersey
California. She's ahead in.
Right, but California has all the districts, so he might get 45% of California.
California, she's ahead in. He'll win Illinois.
Some southern states.
She'll win Massachusetts as well.
You think she'll win Massachusetts, even though the Kennedys have endorsed Obama?
Yeah, she'll win Massachusetts. I was surprised at that, because I really thought the Kennedys would be able to carry it, but she'll win Massachusetts.
And John Kerry was from Massachusetts.
You know, the only thing, let me take a quick look here. You've got Barack Obama that looks like he's probably going to be viable in Illinois big time. Georgia, big time, and that's about it for the big states. There are some smaller ones that he'll win.
But that's what I found interesting. The states that are blue, 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 except for Illinois, which is, you know, an anomaly because it's his home state,
mm-hmm.
The blue states are going for Hillary Clinton, New York, New Jersey, California. These are states that if a Democrat loses in the national race, it's a landslide Republican victory. The purple states and the red states, those are the ones that tend to be going for Obama. You agree?
In the Democratic primary.
Right, in the Democratic primary.
But that doesn't mean that, you know, that they're attracting people. I mean, remember, we're in the round now of closed primaries. You know, in the beginning when you had Iowa and New Hampshire, when anybody could go into any primary and take any ballot, you might have an argument where you're measuring, okay, who's attracting more of the independents to come in or something like that. But now that we're in the round of closed primaries, you really can't read anything into that the purplish states are swinging in Obama's direction. Because, you know, all he's doing is appealing to the Democratic base. And so the Democratic base in that particular area may be going with him. But it looks right now like Senator Clinton's going to have a big win. Now, I'm going to take back what I just said.
You think she's going to have a big win tomorrow?
I don't think she's going to have a big win. First of all, you've got the proportional representation, which we talked about, which is a problem for her. But secondly, all the momentum is in Barack Obama's direction.
You think he'll have a big win?
And no, I think
it'll be a big muddle.
I think it'll be a slight Obama win.
Really? You think
tomorrow
he'll end up with more delegates than her?
I do.
When the dust settles tomorrow.
I think when the dust settles tomorrow, he will wind up with more delegates than she does. And he's well behind.
And
so
if that's the case, I think Hillary Clinton's in a lot of trouble. Because if Obama, at the end of tomorrow night, ends up with more delegates than she, any invincibility, any invulnerability that she had is gone. And then I think it moves even more in his direction.
It's going to be a very interesting day.
If what you say happens. Now, Mike, you've been on my show for more than 2 years now. You've heard me, my views on a large variety of issues. And I asked you before he came if you knew who I endorsed, because I made a public endorsement last week, and you said you didn't. Before I tell you who I endorsed, I'm curious if you'll guess it right.
All right.
Because some of my listeners guessed right and some guessed wrong, but they're about half and half.
Here's my guess on it.
Okay.
I know that you were very, very strong in the beginning for Senator Clinton. You always were comfortable with Barack Obama, but you thought that Senator Clinton was perhaps best embodying what you thought would be the candidate for your party. Then you started looking at it and you said, well, I know this Obama guy is really, really good. Now, I didn't hear your endorsement, but at this point, I think it's all about momentum. And I think Barack Obama has captured you up in the momentum, and I think you've probably switched and gone to his side.
Ha! You win. I did endorse Barack Obama, and let me tell you why. And I want to be clear. This is nothing negative about Hillary Clinton. I like Hillary Clinton. I respect Hillary Clinton. I will happily campaign for Hillary Clinton if she wins our party's nomination, far more happily than for John Kerry. I mean, John Kerry in 2004 was an anti-Bush vote, let's face it. I mean, John Kerry was a fine man, but I was voting against Bush. I will happily vote for Hillary Clinton if she's our nominee. However, the reason I'm choosing Obama isn't about policy. As I've said, you know, she wins on health care, he wins on Iraq, she wins on energy, he wins on bankruptcy, and I couldn't find any other differences between them. To me, what impresses me about Barack Obama is precisely what I just said to you, getting the purple states, getting the independents. Yes, Hillary Clinton wins the core Democrats, but he wins over the independents. We need those independents, particularly if it's a John McCain, but even in a Romney victory, he gets, there are even Obamacans, there are Obama Republicans that are coming over to his side. I see that he can bring in and cross over better than she can. And I don't necessarily think that's fair. I think a lot of it is the media loves Obama the way they love John McCain and hates Clinton the way they hate Romney. But fair or not, I do see him pulling that, and my goal is a Democratic victory in November. So I like both of them. I'm very inspired by Obama. I think he definitely gives the better speech. Hillary Clinton, I do think, knows the details of policy better than he does. I do. I want to see them run together. That's my dream ticket. But forced to choose, forced really hard for me to choose, I did pick Barack Obama, and I do endorse him.
Well, we'll see if that helps him or hurts him.
I don't know. But do you agree with me that he draws more independents than she does, and particularly in November? Because the primary is one thing. I care about November.
Here's Barack Obama's electoral strength. He inspires people to come out that haven't come out before.
Young people who don't vote otherwise.
Yeah, he brings in new voters. And, of course, you know, he hasn't, as Senator Clinton said, he hasn't been properly vetted. You know, we really don't know enough about him.
So what dirty tricks are you going to play on Barack Obama?
Well, you know,
you're going to talk about his middle name.
I don't even know what his middle name is.
His middle name is Hussein.
Oh, well, how lucky
you're,
for him.
You're going to enjoy that, aren't you?
No.
No, what are you going to do? I mean, you swift-voted John Kerry, right? You made up about Hillary Clinton. Oh, no, she changed the travel agent in the White House. That became Travelgate and reason for 1,000 subpoenas. How are you going to attack Barack Obama?
We don't have to attack Barack Obama. You know, we were talking about John McCain with an 82% American Conservative Union rating. You know, is that conservative enough? Barack Obama, for the last 2 years, has been the most liberal member of the Senate, of the United States Senate. We're just going to point out his policies, that this guy is a reflexive, knee-jerk liberal. He believes in more government. He believes in nanny government. He believes that he can take your money and provide a better life for you than you can provide for yourself. And that's where we're going to attack him.
We're going to expose
him for being the flat-out, knee-jerk, ideological liberal that he is. He wants to run your life and my life, and I don't want him to.
The fact is that Obama does talk beyond these liberal-conservative distinctions. He talks about no red state, blue state. He's someone who's willing to sit down and talk with the other side in a way that goes beyond partisanship, and that's his selling point.
But
he really is a uniter, not a divider.
But his voting record does not reflect his rhetoric, and we will point that out. Yes, he gives a great speech. Not even a good speech. The guy's an orator.
He's as good or even better than Bill Clinton.
He's an orator. But his voting record does not match his oration, and we're going to point that out, and we're going to point it out forcefully. And by the time people get to know Barack Obama and he's been properly politically vetted for the American people, I'm fairly confident that he's not going to win.
Now, are you willing to predict a Barack Obama nomination?
I think that if he...
Because I endorsed the man, but I'm not going to go out on that limb.
After Iowa, I said that I thought he was going to win, and nothing that's happened since has really shaken my my belief in that.
Why? Why isn't Hillary Clinton doing better? Listen, the American people...
Because she's not inspirational. Yeah, he's the inspiring one. He's bringing the people out.
But people don't remember that Bill Clinton had a higher approval rating than any other president in my lifetime. Higher than Ronald Reagan, your hero, your god. Bill Clinton had a higher approval rating, highest probably since John Kennedy, you know, moments maybe after his assassination. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton brought us peace and prosperity. Your party seems to only bring us recession and economic downturn and war.
Do you forget the Clinton recession? I mean, we were in...
There was no Clinton recession.
We were in recession on
election day.
You mean
the one that began in 93?
No.
George Herbert Walker Bush called that, Clinton got us out of it?
We were in recession the day that George Bush was elected president.
The recession began in March of 2001. Ask any economist. Folks, you look it up for yourself. That's when the recession began.
Well, you know, economists will differ, but I think I've got my side that will say that we're in recession on election day.
Why is it that a democratic expansion lasts for so long? The rich get richer, the poor get richer, we have massive surpluses. Why is it when Democrats fight wars, we hardly lose any men? And why is it that Republican policies always lead to these huge fiascos?
Okay, let's see.
That's a tough answer
Vietnam,
for you.
Vietnam, Democratic War, 57,000 dead.
Okay, in my living memory.
You know.
I'm older than
you.
Nixon was in Vietnam,
I'm older
too.
Than you.
In my memory, I compare Clinton and Bush, and I do think Hillary Clinton had it right when she said, you know, it may take a Clinton to get us out of the Bush years. We have a lot of rebuilding to do after your president, don't we? I mean, he dug us so many holes fiscally. Our army is a wreck. Our financial burden is immense. We have a lot to come up.
You know, Mark, if you look at what the Army and the military, because there are Marines and sailors and airmen over there as well, if you look at what the military is doing over in the Middle East right now, it's their finest hour. They've never been better than they are. Anybody who calls the military broken is just parroting this Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama,
are
Senator Clinton line.
Are we safer
line,
now that we went into Iraq? How did it affect American security? You're going to argue that the number of terrorists is less now than it was 7 years
ago?
What
I'm going to tell you is that we have not had an attack on our homeland soil since 9/11.
Why do you never talk about the anthrax attack? We've had attacks.
Do we have any idea what that was all about? No, we don't.
So the fact that you don't know what it is.
We haven't had a violent, you know, suicidal, typical terrorist
attack. No, we had a hurricane that killed more than 1,000 people and decimated an American city.
What
happened in New Orleans was worse than what happened in New York in terms of property damage. I mean, I'm not saying what happened in New York was good, but that was something that was wholly preventable, and that's my point. We have all this these resources we can't protect the people of New Orleans.
You're making no sense. First of all, when the levees broke, that was what caused the property damage. Now,
and the levees broke because we didn't prepare our infrastructure. We have falling down in Minnesota.
We had 8 years of Bill Clinton to prepare those levees for the big hurricane, and did we spend so much as a dime on it? No,
we
not
had
one
a massive
dime.
Surplus
not
during
a dime.
Bill Clinton's era.
And why didn't we spend some of it then on the levees?
Well,
if you're
they
concerned
had deteriorated
about it.
Enough, but we had the Times-Picayune.
You better move
said
on. You're losing this one.
We had in 02, we had a desperate need for those levees. Here's the point, and it's broader than Katrina, and it's broader than the bridge that collapsed in Minneapolis. Our infrastructure is falling apart. And it's falling apart because, as Republican Ron Paul said in the Republican debate, in Iraq, we blow up their bridge, and then we'll rebuild their bridge, and meanwhile, we have bridges falling in the United States. The question in November will be, is $1 trillion best spent on Iraq, or is it best spent at home?
If you don't have national security, you got nothing.
When we come back, we'll go to your questions on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com or your calls, 888-48-MARK, right back after this.
One day, I forgot to throw away my trash after lunch, but then I saw it later when I was playing in the woods. The next week, I went boating with my grandpa, and there it was. I tried to go swimming, but I couldn't because of my trash. And when I went fishing, you can guess what I caught that day. So now I always throw away my trash in the garbage can, where it belongs.
One in eight Americans goes hungry. One idea helped change that. A community started a garden that blossomed into farmers markets. One in six children lives in poverty. One group of women found an answer by opening a daycare center that their neighbors could afford. Today, 36 million Americans live in poverty. But one by one, people are helping themselves and each other to change the picture of poverty to one of hope. For easy ways you can help, visit PovertyUSA.org.
Every year, 250,000 Americans are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
My fellow scientists and I are working on treatments and a cure for this deadly disease.
Millions of lives are at stake. Alzheimer's disease affects one in three families.
We're committed to uncovering the mystery of Alzheimer's.
And we're not going to quit until the job is done.
To find out more about Alzheimer's disease, call 1-800-437-2423.
Only through research will a cure be found.
James, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not a helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We asked for comments on the blog, and your comments poured in. And if you haven't seen the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com, I want to encourage you to take a look at it, make your comments. We will read them on the air. Let's show some of them. There are many, many right here on the blog. Let's show it up if we can. This is the Prelude to Super Tuesday, and we have one person who writes about Ann Coulter's comment that she'll campaign for Hillary Clinton if John McCain is the nominee. He wants to know if Mike Lane can put a leash on Coulter geist that restrains her in the Republican yard. If not, he and the GOP need to get a shovel and pick up her droppings from the Democratic yard. Don't make us call the pound on your dog.
Nobody controls Ann Coulter.
He also wants to know if Coulter campaigns and votes for Hillary, will Mike follow? As a strong Republican core conscience, I think the answer for that I can safely say is
Ann Coulter does not have the pipe to play to get me to follow.
Okay, here's a more serious question. Robert says that he's read that Willard Mitt Romney is the Bush family's favorite, the heir to George W. Bush in this election. Can you verify that rumor?
There's no doubt that the Jeb Bush machine in Florida went all out for Romney. Whether or not that extends throughout the rest of the family, it doesn't really matter. The father is essentially retired and not involved in politics. The president is staying out of it officially and really neutral. So the Jeb Bush was the.
Well, what about the George W. Bush machine? I mean, Karl Rove and his advisors, they're really more pulling for Romney than McCain, aren't
Karl
they?
Rove is staying out of it. There may be a lot of people from the Bush machine that are involved in the Romney campaign.
I mean, is it fair to say that it's not 100%, but more Bushies support Romney than support McCain?
There has never been a total mending of the fences between McCain and Bush, that's for sure.
Robert also is concerned, wants to know if you're concerned that a Democrat capturing the White House will allow Democratic eyes to open the Bush-Cheney sacred secrets box. Mike, you could probably go on for hours talking about that. Give a brief response.
I'd like to see that box myself. I have no idea where it is.
Good. You just heard it. A Republican wants the Bush administration to disclose more of their secrets.
I don't know what secrets we're talking about.
Glad to hear it.
If they're fun and juicy, let's go for it.
Tom writes, Mike, you are right. McCain will not be a good choice. He is willing to sell his soul to anyone to be president. No way to do that. Might as well make it Bill Clinton, who never tells the truth if you act this way. Tom sounds like someone who doesn't like either party very much.
It sounds to me like he's a Republican who doesn't like McCain. He's probably a Romney fan. Governor Romney will make a fine nominee if he gets it. I just don't think he will.
Vicky writes, is Coulter serious about voting for Hillary Clinton? I've said she isn't. You also say...
And Coulter's in the business of making money.
Yeah, I agree. She's a performance artist. She just does it to say extreme things. Vicky writes that I had written, and it's true, on the blog, for Democrats it's difficult to decide because both candidates are so good.
intelligent, compassionate, and dedicated to serving all Americans. Vicky writes, all Americans except the unborn. To which Ed from New York responds, Vicky, some of us feel that poor children and adults in America who are alive and hurting now take precedence over those yet to be born.
Well, I would think that Vicky would argue we don't need to make distinctions.
Moving on, we have AK writes, McCain's campaign funds had dried up by last August. By all accounts, it came as a surprise to him. If McCain doesn't have a handle on the finances of his own campaign, what would he do with the finances of this country? Romney's experience with fiduciary matters is vastly superior to McCain's. Romney is the more rational candidate, AK writes, a characteristic that will serve him well while dealing with defense, the economy, and immigration.
John McCain made a huge mistake in the first half of his campaign. What he did was he allowed those around him, the consultants and people that were on his payroll, to run the whole thing while he was out there doing what candidates are supposed to do. As a consultant, I'll tell you, I tell any candidate, go out and raise money and meet voters. Don't worry about the internal of the campaign. We'll take care of that. Well, that's what John McCain did, and unfortunately, he had some people around him that did not serve him well.
But doesn't AK have a point? I mean, McCain ran his campaign abominably, lost all his money. You know, we have...
Didn't lose it. Spent it on useless things.
Spent it all on useless things. Fine. A bridge to nowhere, perhaps.
No, spent it on consultants to nowhere. But he had the biggest bloated consultant staff you'd ever want to see.
Okay, but here's AK's point. We are entering a recession. We're probably already there now. We have the most massive debt in U.S. history. Unlike the Democrats, who are fiscal conservatives, we have big government, George Bush, who spent $3.5 trillion compared to Bill Clinton's $236 billion surplus. We're in massive economic trouble, and John McCain can't even handle his campaign's finances, AK writes. How can he handle the nation's?
If John McCain's reputation, or if his difficulties with some of the conservatives is that he's not a reflexive no taxes, no taxes, no taxes, he does have a 26-year history of being a budget hawk. He's a guy who looks for wasteful spending and roots it out and tries to get rid of it. He didn't assume that particular responsibility for his campaign. He let his staff run that part of it. He found out that wasn't the way to do it. I'd say the guy, you know, lesson learned here. He learned what he should do.
Let me reverse.
He's back.
Let me reverse the question. Take it back on AK a notch.
All right.
If McCain spent all his resources,
right.
Romney didn't have to raise money. He didn't have to go door to door. He brought in all his own money in the campaign. At least McCain's money came from people who supported him. Romney, it came from his checkbook. At what point will Romney have bought the presidency?
Well, Romney has raised a good deal of money. I mean, I think his total amount raised is in the $75 million category, maybe a little higher. But there's no doubt that he's matched at least 50% of that with his own money and has shown that he's prepared to spend even more on that. You know, how can you blame a guy who's successful? He went out, he didn't come from a wealthy family. He went out and he started the venture capital fund and he made himself
I'm not blaming him for being successful. What I'm saying is we have a very strange, and we could go on a long time on this, but we have a very strange American political system where if you're filthy rich, you can buy a candidacy, whereas everybody else has to raise money based on your ideas. That is an unequal playing field.
I think we're going to find out tomorrow that no matter how wealthy Governor Romney may have been, he was not able to buy the presidency or even the nomination.
And the way George Bush did.
And you can go back to the last one like this, which was Ross Perot. Everyone knew him, and he was unable to buy the presidency.
Let me ask you about an issue we haven't discussed yet. You have predicted Obama wins the nomination. I've endorsed him, not made that prediction. But assuming it is Obama, and you also think it's going to be John McCain, we have the oldest candidate in the race versus the youngest. We have someone, John McCain is 71 years old. He is 2 years older than Ronald Reagan was when he became the oldest president in American history. John McCain will become the oldest president in American history.
Now, oldest first-term president.
Oldest first-term president.
Because Ronald Reagan was reelected when he
was the oldest first-term president in American history. But by the time Ronald Reagan got to his second term, Alzheimer's had already set in. The man was literally not there during the very last years of his presidency. If that set in,
I don't think that's fair, Mark. I think the Alzheimer's was something that happened after he left office.
No, now, I mean Nancy Reagan was setting it based on astrology that she was setting his schedule. I mean, Ronald Reagan was increasingly not there, and she was increasingly in charge.
No. You know, if you want to talk about who was filling a power vacuum, if there was one, It was not, read Don Regan's book. You know, he'll tell you about how that works.
My point is he's going to be 71 years old.
Right.
And here you have Obama, 46 years old.
Right.
A man who already inspires the young like no one has probably since Jack Kennedy. Here is the generational divide. Here is old versus new. I mean, the oldest candidate and the youngest candidate. Don't you think if it's an Obama-McCain race, that just the excitement of the young is going to put Obama over the top?
There's that possibility. It's way too early to tell. There's about 39, 40 political lifetimes between now and November. So there's a lot of campaigning to be done. The issues haven't even been defined yet. Once we have two nominees, then we'll start doing that. We'll highlight Obama's lack of experience, the fact that he's not yet qualified to be president, and his liberal voting record. If you want to attack McCain on his age, you know, I wish you well and stuff like that. Senior citizens are a very, very important part of the electorate.
You're going to want a president that can serve two terms if you have a president, right? And then, you know, you look at 8 years and he'll be close to 80. He did spend 6 years in Hanoi Hilton.
I think John McCain's going to tell you that he's running for the first term and that no decisions will be made on an 8-year thing. He's going to tell you he's running for the first term. And that, you know, any decision on whether or not he runs for a second term will be made after he looks at the success and track record of his first term.
Let me read another comment from AK, who's clearly a Romney supporter and has put a number of comments on the blog. AK, first of all, thinks, and I agree with him, that the media has been pro-McCain and anti-Romney, and I would add the media has been pro-Obama and anti-Clinton. Do you agree with me?
In general, I think McCain and Obama have had an easier ride with the media than the rest of the candidate field.
I completely agree on that. AK writes, when the choice is between McCain and Clinton, it's a no-win for conservatives. When the choice is between Romney and Clinton, there's a chance for conservatives to prevail. Huckabee is a spoiler. A vote for him is a vote for McCain. You agree with AK?
There is, again, some evidence that Huckabee's continued presence in the race is siphoning votes in larger numbers from Romney than it does from McCain. But again, you're talking about polling second choice data, and second choice polling is notoriously unreliable. You really don't get anything you can hang your hat on under those circumstances.
We have another comment, this one by, this is Robert, talks about the fact that we're increasingly being owed to China. That's true, but I want to get back to the race. We have here, this is one from, who writes this? Alan, the last writer. He writes that one who can be manipulated is one who can't see the manipulation. That the Clintons are telling us they don't think voters are smart enough to know they're being manipulated. They insult our intelligence. I don't know. I guess we're running out of time. I actually am not so down on the Clintons. I think Hillary Clinton would be a terrific choice. I'm endorsing Obama. I think she would, but I'm endorsing Obama because I actually think he's more formidable than even Hillary Clinton. All of you, do not miss watching Super Tuesday tomorrow. It is a political pundit, the most exciting election season, certainly in my lifetime, and I can't tell you who's going to win. I'm not going to break the predictions that Mike Lane did, but for both of them, we're glad you watched the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week. This is Mark signing off.